Blog Talk Radio.
It's time for the Get Ready Show!
Best in pro wrestling talk.
And that's the bottom line. Because Stone Cold backs up. This right here is the future of wrestling.
And it begins now.
Gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. You have just come aboard the bus. It's the Ken Reedy Show, the best in pro wrestling talk. Thanks for tuning in. We want to hear from you. 347-838-9815 is the number to call. You want to talk wrestling, here is the place to do it. So give us a call. We want to know what you think. Check us out over there on Facebook, facebook.com/the Ken Reedy Show. We got a show chat going on there right now, each and every Monday night. We have a Raw chat up there on the Facebook page. We got Twitter. Our handle on Twitter is at The Ken Reedy Show. You can follow us there if you'd like. And as always, thekenreedyshow.com is our website. Updated information. We got a mess of blogs up there. So go check out thekenreedyshow.com. We got some news for you. Just let you guys know, and I kind of hit upon this a few weeks ago. Just kind of touched on it a bit. But in August, I also, aside from being a wrestling fanatic, I also do a little music. We have a band. Name of the band is SRO, Standing Room Only. And we're fortunate enough to get booked at a concert in Colorado in August. Actually, it's August 6th, 17th. We're out there in Colorado, and it's this big anti-bullying concert, which is really cool to be a part of this cause. If you want more information on the cause, check out Stand Up, Speak Out. It's the name of the cause. We also have stuff up on our website if you want more information about the cause. Or if you're listening to us right now out in Colorado, or you're near Colorado and want to go to the show, check out our website. We got information there. But we got booked on that show. Vertical Horizon is the headliner. So we're really excited to be a part of the show. It's going to be a lot of fun. But because of this, going into August, we have a lot of commitments. It's amazing, but we're doing press stuff and obviously getting as many rehearsals in as we can. So, and just to kind of get our heads straight and, focused. And we're going to be taking the month of August off from this show. So I'm going to miss you guys, going to miss talking wrestling, but we're going to take the month of August off. I'm going to be talking with Dave, and we're going to come up, and our producer, and we're going to come up with some new segments, some new ideas. We're going to kind of revitalize the show as well. So, and aside from, doing stuff for the music, we are going to be meeting about the show and coming up with some new ideas. So once we get back in September, we'll hit the ground running and bring you the best in pro wrestling talk as only we can. So let's get it in while we can. Let's enjoy it while it's here. We'll be off for the month of August, so that's the way it is. We'll miss you guys, but again, we're going to come back with a bigger and better show come September. So thank you guys for your support. If you want to talk wrestling, give us a call, 347-838-9815. On the line, as always, my tag team partner, Dave, is on the line. Dave, how you doing tonight?
I am doing absolutely wonderful. How about you, Ken?
Doing all right. Can I tell you something? And this is funny. I think I've been doing this show maybe a little too long because I had the weirdest dream last night. And I'm having this dream where I wake up in the dream. I wake up and I go outside and somehow my entire backyard is underwater. somehow over the course of the night, my whole backyard is underwater. And we have a pool in the backyard and this little kind of bar area. All of that is completely underwater. And I'm in a panic as I can't believe, like, I mean, what the hell happened? Why is, like, there a lake where my backyard used to be? Somehow, the next day, I wake up. This is all happening in my dream. The water is gone. There's some damage to my deck. And after all this is done, for some reason, Bob Arian is in my backyard. and after this incredible supernatural event of my backyard just being completely covered in water, Bob Arian is lecturing me on what type of filter I should be using on my pool.
I mean, I don't know what to say, but then again, knowing Bob, it makes a lot of sense that you would have this dream. That would be something I would see him doing. I was waiting for you to say that, like, maybe, like, he came in from, like, a helicopter and, like, rescued you and, you know, and saved you from, you know, almost being submerged underwater. But
none of that. It's just giving me lectures. And he had filters with him. He had, like, 5 filters with him, and he was telling me which ones I should attach to the pool. So I
Bob
go
probably,
for you. I don't
Bob
know.
Probably used to sell hot tubs and pools in another lifetime.
Maybe it's good we'll be taking a month off. Just saying, like, Bob Arian is into my subconscious psyche. So, yeah, and I'd be curious to know if Bob has ever worked with pool filters, but go figure. So we're here to talk wrestling tonight. You know, right before we got on the air, we did have some breaking news, and as much as we love talking the opinions and going over matches and predictions and all that stuff, we also do our best here to bring you the news when it comes out. So, Dave, interesting bit of news breaking right before we went on the air.
Yeah, last week, WWE officials, the president of live events, and John Sabor visited the Dallas Cowboys Stadium in Arlington, Texas, and met with the mayor of Dallas and the mayor of Arlington, Texas, to discuss possibly bringing WrestleMania in either 2015 or 2016 to the enormous brand-new Cowboys Stadium facility. The Pro Wrestling Spotlight on Facebook posted this just a few minutes ago, and they posted a picture of this gigantic jumbotron that you see. For you football fans out there who have seen a Cowboys game on TV, they have this enormous jumbotron that goes from, you know, one length of, you know, the 20-yard line to the other side of the field where the 20-yard line is. And there's a picture that says Cowboys Stadium welcomes John Sabor, and a picture of The Rock and John Cena in that on the video screen. So they're making a really hard sales pitch to get WWE to bring WrestleMania to the enormous Cowboys Stadium, which for football games, I believe, seats just a little over 100,000 people. So that's something. I mean, I mentioned it last week, on the Facebook page, but San Francisco and their new stadium has been talked about for a future WrestleMania in 2015 or 2016. The Lincoln Financial Field in Philadelphia is another candidate as well. So, three big cities, three big markets. Philadelphia, of course, they just had Money in the Bank, and the roots of ECW were there, and the rabid Philadelphia fans. And San Francisco was a big territory at one time in wrestling. A lot of names like Pat Patterson, Roddy Piper, the Maivia family worked there. And, of course, Dallas, the home of the Von Erichs and the Freebirds. So three big wrestling markets from back in the territory days, you know, wanting a WrestleMania in their city. It's some great news, and certainly all three cities I would definitely travel to see a WrestleMania, especially Dallas and San Francisco, two cities I've never been to before, and I hear nothing but good things about them. So, but that's some pretty cool news.
Yeah, damn you, Jerry Jones. Damn you! I was really excited because, as most people who listen to the show know, I'm a big 49er fan, and it's not easy to get 49er tickets, so have not made it a point to get out to San Francisco and see a game, and I probably wouldn't see a game at the new stadium, although I'd love to. So I was pretty psyched when I heard that WrestleMania was going to be at the 49ers' new stadium. So we'll see what happens. I think either stadium. I mean, you're right. I've been to Dallas, but we just kind of we passed through. Actually, after WrestleMania 25, we road tripped 25, so we kind of went through Dallas. But it would be interesting to go there, and that stadium is really amazing. So it would be really cool to go to WrestleMania at Dallas. So either stadium. I mean, seeing a lot of the virtual pictures of the stadium in San Francisco, it looks like it's going to be an incredible stadium. Dallas, we know it's an incredible stadium. So you know, we'll see what happens. But it, you know, Dave, it's interesting how you know WrestleMania has evolved, and now you know it's almost you know when you look at even the major sports. In America, and you look at, you know, baseball and hockey and basketball, you know, it's wrestling and WrestleMania has become almost second to the Super Bowl. And it has that feeling, and you have cities bidding on it. And, you know, years in advance, you're getting the release of what city is going to get the WrestleMania. I mean, it's pretty incredible to see how huge this event has become, and the amazing thing is it doesn't seem to be slowing down. I mean, it's gotten enormous, and it just seems to be getting bigger and bigger as the years go on.
Absolutely. I mean, when I growing up, it was, you know, I never heard stories of cities that had bid on it. You know, even when it was in some certain stadiums like Safeco Field in Seattle at WrestleMania 19, or, you know, the Hoosier Dome in Indianapolis for WrestleMania 8, the Pontiac Silverdome. Like, the, you know, Vince was the one that chose to run the Pontiac Silverdome, and they all thought he was crazy that he was going to try and pack it. And he ended up beating the Pope's record with headlining with Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant back in 1987. I think he also beat the Rolling Stones, too, if I'm not mistaken. So he shattered two records by, like, 17,000 people in that stadium. However, as the years have evolved, you know, growing up, it would just be, you know, held in a random arena in, like, a big market, you know, the exception of WrestleMania 11 held in, you know, my hometown of Hartford, Connecticut, which is not a big market. They were held, you know, the Garden, Madison Square Garden, or, you know, Los Angeles, California, Chicago, and smaller, you know, 15,000-seat arenas. But as it's gotten bigger, more people want to go in the stadiums, and, you know, it's the way to go. It makes WrestleMania... Looking back on it, especially going to, you know, five WrestleManias being in, like, football stadiums, I couldn't imagine as a younger kid going to a WrestleMania inside an arena, because being in a stadium just makes the show seem bigger than life. It's like the Super Bowl. You know, you said it's even second to the Super Bowl. You know, it's up there with the Olympics, with cities that bid to have the, you know, the Olympic Games. And it's just, it's crazy, you know, in the 30 years I've been on this earth, how, you know, and 27 of them have been dedicated to professional wrestling, how it's just how it's evolved and gone from being, you know, a small show but a big deal in a small arena to now it's in, you know, 70, 80,000, you know, seat stadiums and people from all over the world. I mean, I never realized the magnitude of it until I went to Detroit at WrestleMania 23, and I sat 10 rows behind the announcer's table, and I sat with people from Germany, people from Australia, people from China, locals from Detroit. I mean, I had like a broad spectrum and a geography lesson while I was watching a wrestling match with the people. It's just, it's crazy how many people travel all over the world for it. And even people in this own country, too, you know. You and, you know, our producer Michelle met my brothers in Phoenix at WrestleMania, and look what's come of it. You know, people meet people from all over the country and obtain friendships with each other, and then they plan to be together for the following year's WrestleMania. It really is like a big, like, celebration of, like, professional wrestling and just overall a damn good time. And, you know, having it in bigger stadiums helps that with, you know, relationships amongst people and friendships and stuff like that. It's just super. It's just awesome. I think it's so cool.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's almost like, you know, for wrestling fans, and as you go to a couple, you know, and you meet people, it winds up being almost like it's a big family reunion. You know, when you get there, that's, you know, this huge stadium is holding this family reunion, and it's amazing. And even people you don't actually meet, like sometimes you go to a WrestleMania game and it's like, oh, that guy looks familiar. I saw him here last year. And it's pretty incredible because, you know, when you think about it, I mean, growing up in the 80s, and, you know, I'm a little older than Dave, and, you know, watching how, you know, wrestling exploded in the 80s. And it's interesting because I do think that going back to that time period when it exploded with Cyndi Lauper involved and helping put wrestling on the map, and again, really should be in the celebrity, quote, wing of the Hall of Fame. She had as much to do with the explosion in the 80s for wrestling as anybody. But it's interesting when you go back, like Hulk Hogan, the way wrestling blew up, there was not anybody on the planet that didn't know who Hulk Hogan was. I don't know if we've ever had, maybe Stone Cold came close, but it's. I don't know if we ever had a wrestler that really kind of had that crossover appeal that Hogan was able to have. And you know, it really blew up in the mainstream. I don't feel like wrestling has that mainstream appeal as much as it did in the 80s, but it's so much bigger. That's what's so unusual about how things have evolved over time. It's just, you know, they've created just that wrestling has created their own niche fan base, but it's an enormous fan base, and it just keeps getting bigger and bigger. And I think a lot of wrestling fans become more passionate wrestling fans because they're defending being wrestling fans to non-wrestling fans. But it's just amazing to see how it's grown. I remember when WrestleMania 1 happened, you know, none of us thought that, like, you know, we just thought, hey, it's WrestleMania. We didn't think that there'd be a WrestleMania 2 or a WrestleMania 30 for that matter. So it's interesting to see how it all evolves. And now it's like just this huge, big love fest every year amongst wrestling fans. And you're right. I mean, the first year I went, I went to 10 and 10 was at the Garden. So the difference between going to WrestleMania 10 and then going to 25 and then everyone since then, it's amazing what the difference is. And, you know, going to 25, you know, yeah, I mean, like you're saying, I remember sitting and talking with some guys from Scotland who are very passionate wrestling fans. I think they're very passionate about everything. But talking to some guys from New Zealand, met a couple of people from North Dakota. It's just an amazing event. And now we're looking at you know, two stadiums that are high-level, exciting locations to be in, whether it's San Francisco or Dallas. You know, we're looking forward to, you know, we thought we were talking too early about WrestleMania 30, and now with the breaking news, we wind up starting off tonight's show with talking about past WrestleMania 30. So it's pretty amazing what's going on, and, you know, either stadium will be really exciting to get to go to. 347-838-9815 is the number to call Talk Wrestling. We're waiting a little later on. We're going to have Chris Shady Lamberton from NEFW. He's getting ready for his match at Cruel Summer 3. And he's very interesting matchup. I think he's got his career on the line. So he's going to be giving us some insight on what it's like to potentially to be giving up his wrestling career. And we're going to be talking with him a little later on in the show. But for now, you know, we thought it was a big-time event. Lots of storylines are starting and stopping. And, you know, we talked on Sunday. It is one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. Some may say it might be three, if not two, to WrestleMania. Money in the Bank happened Sunday. Dave, what did you think of the pay-per-view this past Sunday?
I thought it was a great pay-per-view overall. The Money in the Bank ladder matches delivered. I liked the Dolph Ziggler Alberto Del Rio match. The audience was hot. The pre-show match was great. The only complaint I had was that they took two commercial breaks during the pre-show. And what was cool about it is that I've never watched any of these pre-show matches that they had before, and they've done them all on like YouTube or the WWE app or one of the other social media websites. But this is the first time that they've ever done the pre-show live on the pay-per-view channel, because normally when you order a WWE pay-per-view, there's like a pre-recorded in-studio pre-show of, you know, hyping up the matches that are coming up. But this was, you know, live, and I thought that this was pretty cool and something that, you know, made the event a lot bigger. And of course, the audience in Philadelphia helped with that too, as well as a great crowd. You know, I liked both Money in the Bank ladder matches delivered. I was wrong on both of my picks. But, you know, I did make mention on Tuesday that there could be a case for Damian Sandow winning the Money in the Bank because he had a pretty solid run with Sheamus. And you know, I was, you know, I thoroughly enjoyed the pay-per-view. I really did. I'll be honest with you, you know, I was tired from that entire day. I fell asleep during the John Cena-Mark Henry match. I'm not going to lie. And it wasn't because it wasn't good. I was just tired. I ended up watching it yesterday, and I liked the match itself. But, you know, wasn't a stinker on the card. Overall, it was a good pay-per-view, solid wrestling action. You know, the first Money in the Bank ladder match, the world championship match, I told you at the end of Sunday's show how I was pumped for that match. It exceeded my expectations. Some very cool new innovative spots, some newer talent. You know, you saw a guy like Cody Rhodes really break out into his own. You know, there were moments where I thought he was going to win that because he was so on fire. The crowd was so behind him. Overall, good show. And that's really all I got to say.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought, you know, every match delivered. I mean, every match to me, it was good to great. They're all entertaining. You know, I thought both Money in the Bank ladder matches definitely delivered. I'm really curious. I mean, we talked. You know, you won the overall. I guess we split on pay per view picks. Like we had two differences, and because you got one right and I got one right, but you had the right pick on the kickoff, so you won the overall as far as the picks go. But Damian Sandow, definitely an interesting choice. We did discuss on Sunday, and both of us, I think we're in agreement that there was going to be some sort of rift between him and Cody Rhodes. We thought the rift would occur at some other point in the match, but as it turns out, it took place at going for the briefcase. And it looks like we could have a very interesting feud with Cody and Sandow. I like what I'm seeing. Obviously, we're going to look at Cody is going to be the face and Sandow is going to be the heel. But interesting end. I didn't see it coming. Interesting, you know, they've played it off for a while with these two as being the best of friends. Even when they were trying to split them up as a tag team, we're going to remain the best of friends, but we're just going in different directions as single competitors. And you know, I just thought it was a really cool, you know, moment. It was a cool turn. I you know, we'll see how it all plays itself out. I personally, and it was, you know, our pick. I would have liked to have seen Wade Barrett because I feel for him. I still feel for him with the injury that kind of shelved him for a while. You know, I really want to see him kind of take that next step. It would have been interesting to see what he would have done with that, but I can't complain. It's going to be interesting to see. You know, Sandow's one of those guys that when you look at the future and you look at guys that have a bright future and guys that, you know, when we're talking 5-10 years down the road, you think that he's one of the guys that at least got to be maybe written in pencil at this point, but definitely got a you know, chance of being a big-time player in the future of this company. So this is his first test, his first, you know, they're giving him the ball. Let's see what he does with it. You know, he has not won a title yet in the WWE, so now he's Money in the Bank. He's going after one of the big ones. I'm really curious to see how Damian Sandow handles being Mr. Money in the Bank, how this whole thing unfolds. But there's no denying this guy is very talented, Dave.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, his vocabulary and his microphone skills are, you know, I have a hard time not hating the guy because, you know, being an older wrestling fan and, you know, doing this show and analyzing characters and storylines, when he comes out, I'll LMAO, laugh my ass off because some of the things he says to the guys on, you know, in the audience and, you know, for the most part, he has the majority of the audience against him. You know, he's got a look about him that's just not likable and the stuff that he says. And he's, you know, he thinks he's better than everybody because he's smarter and more educated. And, you know, but there are some smart Mark wrestling fans out there that will cheer him on, you know, with some of the things he says. But for the most part, he's got a majority of the large majority of the audience hating him. But I really don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I guess it's a good thing, but I really don't know where they're going to go with him holding this briefcase, like how long he's going to hold it. I mean, that's the beauty of it with
when someone wins a Money in the Bank briefcase for a contract at a world title, you don't know what's going to happen, but, you know, you can kind of figure out in some cases, but, like, I really don't know, you know, what's going to precede that in the coming months. I know he's got something going on with Cody Rhodes, and that will probably take place at SummerSlam. I've heard a rumor that they're talking about having him defend the briefcase against Cody Rhodes in a match at SummerSlam, which isn't a bad idea. A lot of people frown on that, but I think the briefcase is just as important, if not more important, than a title. And we talked about, you know, the Dolph Ziggler chase with the Money in the Bank briefcase, but I'm really optimistic and curious as to how he's going to get to that point. You know, are we going to see some character, some changes in his character? Are we going to see a more aggressive Damian Sandow? Are we going to see him working with more, you know, main event level talent on a consistent basis like he did with Sheamus? Like, you know, will we see him working with a Randy Orton or, you know, a Daniel Bryan or a Kane or, you know, even a John Cena at some point? Are we going to see him, you know, get built up? Because, I mean, he's had a decent role on TV since he debuted last year, but for the most part, he hasn't really done anything, you know, significant with the exception of last month with Sheamus. So now is a true test to see if, you know, his character is going to stick and if it's going to be, you know, if he can be in the main event working with some of the top guys. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most, seeing the evolution of Damian Sandow, you know, upon cashing in his Money in the Bank contract.
Yeah, I mean, what I love about him, and we've talked about this, you know, in wrestling, a lot of times, you know, especially in recent years, a lot of heels, you know, they wind up being too cool for the room. You know, they're cool heels. They dress nice. They look good. They're witty. And, you know, eventually, like, those heels are you know, they're going to start to get cheers because they're kind of the type of people you want to be like. They're guys that you can look up to. Sandow is cut from that cloth. He's a true heel. He's definitely a true heel. He's kind of a throwback, if you will. As far as the heel department, there's really nothing likable about the guy. And like you're saying, I mean, we all know it's scripted now and it's sports entertainment. And, you know, but if you buy into the storyline and the plot and kind of immerse yourself and enjoy it for that, there's no way in hell you should ever be cheering for this guy. I mean, he's just a jerk. He's that guy that you would absolutely, you know, I mean, put it in context of, like, your office or going back in high school or something. Like, he's that guy that, you know, he's a snob. He over-intellectualizes everything. But as luck would have it, he also could physically back it up. I mean, you would absolutely hate that man if he existed in real life somewhere in your reality. And he plays that part so well. And, you know, instantaneously when you have a split like that and he screws over his best friend, I mean, Cody's stock is going to go through the roof now. I mean, this guy's going to be a real popular babyface. And, you know, I'm interested to see, you know, do they put – and I kind of along that mindset. I'm not a big fan of putting the Money in the Bank briefcase on the line. I don't like it. I just think, you know, you win it, you keep it. I get it, and I get, you know, might add drama, especially these two going at it, but I'm not the biggest fan of putting the briefcase on the line. But I am looking forward to what we're going to see out of Cody and Sandow in the upcoming weeks. I'm sure we're going to see them, if not at SummerSlam, we're going to see them in the ring together on more than one occasion. But really cool matchup. Liked it. You know, I thought everyone kind of pulled their weight. It was a good match, and you know, it's interesting as we talk about a throwback kind of heel, and we'd love to hear from you once we get out to the phone calls. What are some of your favorite heel turns? It was another one of those, like, you know, we don't get a lot of those definitive turns in recent memory, and this was kind of a throwback turn where you had a two friends and one definitively turned on the other. So cool stuff in that match, and Sandow is your world championship Mr. Money in the Bank. We also had a all-star Money in the Bank where I nailed this one, and I if you listen to Sunday's show, I was going back and forth on this pick. You know, my head was telling me Rob Van Dam, my gut was telling me Randy Orton. I kept going back and forth, but I stuck with Randy Orton, Mr. Money in the Bank. You know, I think this is something that he sorely needs for character reasons. I think it gives Randy Orton new life and another very entertaining matchup. But, you know, as much as, you know, Dave, I mean, you picked RVD, but are you mad at the choice that Orton walked away with it?
No, not at all. I you know, when it happened, I said to myself, okay, this, whether he successfully cashes in or not, I think that this is their way of, it's a foreshadowing that he's going to turn heel, and the long-awaited, you know, turn from good guy to bad guy that fans have been wanting to see for over a year now, for maybe even a couple of years with Randy Orton, because he is better as a bad guy than a good guy. And, you know, we could talk about that another time, you know, maybe on Sunday's show, of what could happen with, you know, his cash-in. But I enjoyed it. I liked it. You know, I thought Daniel Bryan was too obvious going in to winning it because he's been so on fire. But at the same time, you know, RVD as well, he was just coming back. Mr. Trivia made a great point Sunday about, you know, the comparisons with The Rock coming back and, you know, RVD. But the one thing that was interesting, and I said it on Sunday's show too about that match, you know, I couldn't wait to hear the place explode. And RVD got a pretty good pop. But, you know, and him being, you know, locally known in Philadelphia, getting his, you know, his start in ECW. But Daniel Bryan, when his music came, like, the entire place erupted, and it was just all like a yes chant, like in unison. And then, like, throughout the course of the match, it was like RVD chants and then yes chants. But they were each one was getting louder and louder. It was like the fans were trying to, you know, top each other with these chants. And I just thought that was like the cool dynamic of the match. There was great action in it. You know, I thought when Sheamus, you know, fell off into the ladder, I thought that was a cool spot. When Orton RKO'd Van Damme in midair off the ladder, that was pretty cool. But Orton winning it, you know, the crowd didn't really care for it too much. But I think at the same time they know something good's going to come out of it with Randy Orton. And especially last night, if you watched his interview segment with John Cena, he said that he wasn't going to squander this opportunity, that he was going to, you know, when it happens, nobody's going to see it coming. You know, it could either be he's telling the truth, or we could see him unsuccessfully cash in the Money in the Bank and be in the same boat that John Cena is, being the only two guys to not win their championship from a successful Money in the Bank cash-in. But it's interesting, and it makes Randy Orton important again because he just felt like a part of the show for over a year. And now he's in the big picture, and they got some faith and trust in him again, even though he's got two strikes in the wellness policy. And I'm looking forward. I've always been a Randy Orton fan. I've always stuck with him through the good and the bad. But I'm really looking forward to seeing what this next run with him being at the top is gonna take place.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny sometimes. You know, wrestling fans, they're a fickle lot. They are a fickle lot. But when you look at Randy Orton, I mean, look, the writing for him has not been great, and maybe part of it is the wellness issue, and, you know, they wanted to keep him away from significant storylines just in case. So, you know, again, it's like differentiating between the performer and the writing, you know? Like, don't hate on a guy because the writing is poor for him. And, man, I mean, look at Randy Orton. I mean, anyone who hates on this guy, I mean, he's like, what is it, like 6'4". He looks like he's chiseled out of granite. The guy can go. For a guy his size, he's incredibly athletic. You know, I get it, like, as a face and being a face and being the Viper. You know, it's kind of incongruous, and I get that it, you know, sometimes that just doesn't gel. But, I mean, and he's okay on the mic. He's not incredible on the mic. But, you know, the physicality this guy brings to the ring, I mean, I'll tell you something. Every time, and people may get caught up with, like, oh, same old thing or same move. I'm sorry. Every time he pulls off that power slam, and he's done it on guys of various sizes. The speed in which he pulls that off, the aggressiveness and the impact, it always kind of gets me to pop a little bit. Like, I just think he's just an incredible athlete, a guy that grew up in this business, who gets the business. You know, I've always liked what Randy Orton brings to the table. I don't understand when people hate on a guy that just, I mean, he's oozing with talent. So, you know, now with this win, he gets back into that spot of relevancy. It was interesting. I mean, Daniel Bryan is so incredibly over. It's ridiculous. I mean, I think a lot of us thought that, you know, Daniel Bryan's pop and cheers would be up there, but RVD would definitely be the hometown favorite. And, yeah, I don't know. I mean, if you want to debate it, I Daniel Bryan, the crowd was hot for Daniel Bryan. So it's interesting to see the crowd reaction. But I'm excited to see where they're going to go now with Randy Orton. What do they do here with him? And I was glad. I mean, I said I didn't want to see Daniel Bryan win. It was too obvious. It was the obvious pick. You know, I mean, everyone wanted to see him win. I mean, there were memes all over the place with just Daniel Bryan and the briefcase and make it happen and we got to see this Sunday and all this other crap. I mean, I was glad. It kind of gave a bit of a twist. I think it's really good for Randy Orton's character, and I'm really curious to see where they're going to go with it. 347-838-9815 is the number to call. We're still waiting for Shady to give us a buzz. So as we're waiting for Shady, why don't we go out to the calls because we got Tony on the line. Tony, are you there?
Allow me to beg your indulgence for a few moments.
How you doing,
I
man?
I had Mr. Money in the Bank, and I totally didn't see him winning it. But I got to say, I did watch the show. I thought it was a lot of fun. The two ladder matches were outstanding. You know, Damien Sandow winning did kind of surprise me. But you know, I mean, I had a feeling that regardless, they were going to go with a Road Scholar's breakup. And they kind of, you know, like cemented that last night after Sandow's match with them. Which the other thing I don't get is, you know, like why have, you know, like to have Sandow win the Money in the Bank and then he loses the next night. I mean, nothing against Christian, but it was just like, you know, it was like, huh? You know, like Christian rolled him up like, what? It was like, that's it? You know, it was kind of weird. You know, just, you know, it's like I don't. Cause sometimes, you know, it's like I don't. WWE, Vince, sometimes they do the whole tear the guy down to build him up bit, but it's just, you know.
Can I comment on that for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
What about it, Dave?
Can I comment on it for a second? I can understand, Tony, why you would feel that way and why a lot of wrestling fans would feel that way. There's been in years past, there have been guys who have won the Money in the Bank contract, and then they're not really seen from too much. They kind of disappear. Not on television a whole lot, or not really doing a whole lot of anything meaningful on television. But they have that ready-made gimmick in their hand. Now, let's just pretend that this is real, that wrestling is real. And let's say, Tony, you were to win the Money in the Bank. Okay? You just beat 7 or 8 guys in a grueling ladder match. You're busted up, you're beat up, you're banged up. But now, you have the opportunity to cash in that briefcase at any time you please for up to 1 year. These guys, let's just say, you would want to take a break a little bit. You would want to step back and be like, you know what, I can have that world title at any time. I don't need to be on TV this week. I don't need to wrestle this guy. I don't need to do this. I don't need to do that. I would hope that, like, I mean, that's how I look at it and when I think of it. When some of these Money in the Bank winners aren't there, like last year, Dolph said he was going to cash in at WrestleMania, but he didn't. He cashed in the following night. He would change his mind. He's a heel. He's a liar. You know what I mean? Like, you're supposed to hate what he says and does, at least that's at the time. You know what I mean? The point I'm getting at here is that, like, I wish the company would acknowledge in some way that, like, when these Money in the Bank guys really don't do anything afterwards, you know, and they kind of disappear or do something, like, meaningful, you know, some people might forget that they're the Money in the Bank winner. But losing a match, it's like, okay, I lost that match, big deal. But guess what? I got a contract that says I can fight for the world title anytime I want for up to a year. So I'll just rest myself for that and not do too much over here this week. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. I see what you're talking about from, like, if it was real point of view. But, you know, I guess it's just kind of come to me. Like, since I know it's not, you know, it's like, you know, I just look at it as, like, to just making the guy look, you know, making the guy look weak, but I get what you're saying there.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, it's a good point, Dave. And like you're saying, if it was real, I mean, you could solve that also with, you know, a couple of well placed vignettes. I mean, you can even have a guy, especially a guy like Sandow that's so arrogant. You know, if you're going to kind of pull back a little bit, you know, have him, you know, relaxing in a mansion somewhere. Have him just do a little vignette where it's like, I don't have to be there. I'm not going to indulge you peasants by being at Monday Night Raw. I have my contract right here, and I'll be there when I'm good and ready. Period. I mean, you could just, and you could have done it with Dolph too. Just kind of a couple vignettes, just almost putting it out there that my strategy is, you know, to rest and wait until my time, which would just make a lot more sense in the context of it being real. Well, as far as the pay-per-view goes, Tony, what else do you think of the rest of the pay-per-view?
I thought for the most part it was a lot of fun. You know, like I said, the other Money in the Bank ladder match was good too. I wasn't expecting Randy Orton to win, though. I got to say, you know, I mean, you called it, but I do think that Orton has gotten better as, you know, like, you know, in the last, you know, like few years or so. I actually do enjoy watching his matches now, because it was I mean, he had a match last night with what's his name there, with Fandango, and the match was actually pretty freaking good. I did like him coming out and saying, it's the whole Viper, you know, I'm the Viper, and when I cash it in, you won't know when it's coming or whatever. I think he's better as a heel, because of the kind of character he is. But I don't know if he's going to cash in on Cena or whatever, but, you know, like I said, him being Money in the Bank is actually, I think, you know, I'm okay, you know, I'm all right with it. I didn't expect him to win, you know, mainly because of the two strikes he's got against him. I thought they're going to take a chance with Orton, but they did. You know, even the other thing I noticed, like, at the end of the match, before he unhooked the briefcase, you know, he was looking around to make sure that everyone else was down before he unhooked it. You know, that was like a good, like, bit of, you know, it's like, okay, let me make sure no one's going to knock me down here. And then, you know, he just unhooked it.
Yeah, I liked it because it kind of gave, you know, the one thing that, and all these, you know, whenever there's a ladder match or something, you know, there's always those moments in the match, and it happens, and it's wrestling, where, like, someone's climbing the ladder so slowly, and you're like, all right, there's no way they're getting up there because there's a spot that's supposed to happen and someone's late. I kind of like that Randy, I mean, he won it at that moment, but he gave realism and a context to be looking around. He wasn't just climbing the rungs as slow as possible. He was checking out to make sure no one was going to jump him from behind before he reached up to grab the briefcase. And I thought that was kind of neat, because in his looking around and in that delay, I was starting to think, all right, who's going to jump up and grab him? And then he wound up getting it. So I thought it was cool that he kind of gave an awareness and a realism to why it was taking him so long to unhook the briefcase. So I thought it was a cool spot. And again, with Randy Orton, I think, you know, he continues to get better. And, you know, you'd be hard pressed, you know, to find a guy his size that can do what he can do in the ring. And, you know, I'm a big Randy fan. Again, you know, maybe limited on the mic, but that guy can go. Real talented guy. Were there any, you know, great Money in the Bank matches or any other match on the card, Tony, that struck you as a really entertaining matchup?
I saw the pre-show match too, and I was just like, my God, this is, you know, besides the two commercial breaks, you know, but I thought that was a good way to start the kick off the show there. You know, I think this is the most over that the Usos have been. I don't know how long. I thought the pre-show match was good. I like the title matches also. The Dolph Del Rio match, I thought was a good match. The finish, though, was like, oh, man, it was, you know, like AJ just coming in and hitting Dolph with the belt. But then, you know, like, they did the breakup last night. I thought it was a good match. The finish was a little flat. Cena Mark Henry, I liked. Mark Henry tapping out, not so much, but the, you know, but I thought he cut a good promo last night too. And even like when the fans chanted, "You tapped out," he was, you know, he pretty much told him, "Yeah, Cena will tap you out too."
Yeah, it was awesome.
Like I said, overall, I thought it was a good, you know, good pay-per-view. You know, I mean, the two Money in the Bank and the two title matches and the pre-show match, I really enjoyed.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they're doing a good job with the pre-show, and it definitely, you know, to me, it gives you, you want to see the pre-show now. I mean, they're building up that pre-show, and that was a real good match. And it's good tag team wrestling, which, you know, has been lacking for quite some time. So it was good to see. The finish with Ziggler and Del Rio was, you know, I get it, but, you know, it's obviously was leading to other things with Dolph Ziggler. And, I kind of like what we're seeing now. You know, there have been times, you know, wrestling, you know, to me, when you look back on wrestling, part of the staple of wrestling history is that definitive heel turn, when one person turns on the other. And, over the years, I feel like, you know, wrestling kind of got away from that whole, like, real, like, just, like, you know, right there, a turn. And we had quite a number of turns leading into, you know, going forward into SummerSlam, like, that to me were kind of, you know, reminiscent of old-school heel turns. When you look at, Sandow turning on Cody, what AJ and Big E did to Ziggler, Heyman turning on Punk. These are all things that are, you know, to me, kind of reminiscent of the old days where guys would just turn on other guys, and it just happened, like, you know, in the blink of an eye, and everyone was shocked that, oh, my God, what is he thinking? What is he doing? And so I kind of dug all of those. I thought they were really neat. Before we let you go, Tony, we're going to discuss a little bit further, but when you know, you've been watching wrestling for a while, and in talking about these heel turns and what we've seen over the past couple of days of just definitive kind of heel turns, do you have a favorite going back as a fan, your favorite turn in wrestling?
Oh, man, I don't know. There have been I wasn't watching, but probably when Andre turned the heel on Hogan, you know, before WrestleMania 3. Was probably one of the best ones.
That's a big one. And, you know, it's funny because that might be, some may say, especially, people my age who are wrestling fans, and some may peg that as perhaps the biggest heel turn ever. Good call on that one, though. That was a big one. And, you know, I think for most wrestling fans, when you look back on, you know, growing up, and we talked a little bit about WrestleMania earlier in the show, WrestleMania 3, to me, and I know to a lot of people, that was the WrestleMania that really definitively, you know, made WrestleMania an annual event. Like, that sold it. That etched it in stone that every year there's going to be a WrestleMania. And Hogan Andre is the cornerstone of that event, the lead-in, the storyline leading up to WrestleMania. And then that main event has just really solidified WrestleMania going forward. So good call on that being your favorite heel turn. Tony is our blogger, and he is the best blogger in the business. You want to check out thekenreedyshow.com, see him blog on Raw, SmackDown, and Impact. So check us out. Check it out on thekenreedyshow.com. Tony, thanks for the call. We'll talk to you Sunday.
You're welcome.
Take it easy, man.
You too.
And getting to that and, talking about heel turns, I mean, Tony brings up a really big one. But it is kind of cool, Dave, seeing these, like, real kind of definitive turn-on-a-dime heel turns that I feel like we haven't seen in quite some time. And when it comes to, you know, I guess everything in wrestling comes in ebb and flows. But, you know, a lot of people, if you're a long-standing fan, you know, some of the most memorable moments you have are those turns, those heel turns. And I really enjoyed what we saw the last 2 days. I mean, it was a lot at one time, but you know, it was cool to see some heel turns. What were some of your favorites growing up?
I didn't see Hogan turning, you know, bad and forming the NWO, and that's probably got to be the biggest heel turn in the history of wrestling, in my opinion, hands down. You know, and every time I watch it, it's, you know, the clip, you know, the promo at the end, or, you know, it's so cool to watch. Between that, we mentioned, you know, on our pre-show, you know, talk about the Michaels and Jannetty in the barber shop. I thought that was great. But one that really gets overshadowed was the double turn at WrestleMania 13. Is really, people really talk about that for, you know, in terms of Steve Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin, how he went from, you know, being a WWF wrestler to a WWF superstar. And, of course, when you think of that image where he's locked in a sharpshooter and he tries to give up and the blood's pouring down his face and goes through the crack of his teeth. And but what gets overlooked, I think, is, you know, it took two people to do that. And Bret Hart was the other guy in that match. And granted, he didn't full-blown turn bad guy that night, but the following night, he let you know about it, that he, you know, that he had changed his ways by, you know, attacking The Rock, you know, when he was Rocky Maivia. He had beaten up Shawn Michaels. He told America, the United States of America, to kiss his ass, which basically is a large portion of the WWF's audience and WWE's audience currently. You know, so he was the number one bad guy, and you know he brought a different spin to being a heel. I mean, we've talked about it on this past show before how one of the coolest angles in wrestling was the Hart Foundation led by Bret Hart against, you know, other American wrestlers like Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels, and that if they were in America they were hated, but if they went to Canada or any other country in the world they were loved. And I thought that was so cool and something that gets overlooked a lot, because you think of WrestleMania 13, you think of that moment where Steve Austin became a good guy and was virtually a good guy for the rest of his career. Even though his characteristics weren't of a good guy, the audience was behind him 100%. But Bret Hart really is the one that, you know, deserves a lot of credit for that too, because it took two people to do that. You know, it took the audience into hating Bret Hart for them to cheer Steve Austin.
Yeah, it was. I mean, that's a really good call, because people do forget about Hart's turn, and they just look at, you know, the birth of Austin 316, and that was a great heel turn. One of my favorites growing up was honestly when Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff turned on Hogan, and you know, that was a tremendous turn. Didn't see it coming, which was great. And you know, when I watched that turn again, you know, and he was Hogan and Mr. Wonderful, and they were teaming up against Stud and Bundy, and you know, Orndorff unleashes a vicious clothesline and then invites Bundy and Stud back into the ring to kind of finish off Hogan. It's interesting, and I would love to, you know, if I'm ever fortunate enough to have Hulk Hogan on the show and interview him, I would love to ask if he looked back on that moment when he was planning his turn and starting the NWO. And you're probably right, Dave. I mean, as far as turns go, you know, you got Andre's turn on Hogan, but Hogan turning and forming the NWO, it'd be hard to argue a bigger heel turn in the history of wrestling. But that heel turn, that moment, the way, you know, he went after Savage and the way Orndorff went after Hogan, the way Orndorff invited Stud and Bundy back into the ring, the way Hogan looked at Hall and Nash and showed that he was allied with them. There are certain similarities with the way the heel turn was structured and the look of it and the behavior. And I would love to ask Hogan if he called on that event and took maybe a page out of Orndorff's handbook when he came up with his turn for the NWO. But yeah, definitely, you know, that was a cool turn. I love the Michaels turn. And again, we're seeing some, you know, you got Heyman and Punk that were best friends. And now Heyman, you know, turns on CM Punk. You know, that's just like the stuff that, like, wrestling is made of. You love the drama behind those real big definitive heel turns. 347-838-9815 is the number to call. What do you think? What'd you think about Money in the Bank? What do you think about all these heel turns abounding? Do you have a favorite heel turn in the history of pro wrestling? We want to hear what you think. But right now, we have Chris Shady Lamberton on the line. He's going to be wrestling in Chicopee, Mass. at Cruel Summer 3. And lots of interesting stuff going on, and we're going to let him talk about it. We got him on the line. Shady, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man.
Thanks for spending a few minutes with us. Now, you got Cruel Summer 3 coming up on August 3rd. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the match you got going on and the stipulation involved?
Well, the match itself, like even the card, I mean, just here in Cruel Summer 3, I mean, we're 3 years into the business now. And, you know, if anyone follows NEFW, the things they've thrown at me, and now I'm in a retirement match, with Jim Nasik, who's been in the business, and honestly, you know, he's one of the first guys I ever trained with, and not a lot of people know that. So the fact that I'm facing the guy with my career on the line that actually trained me in this business is one of the most interesting aspects of this match.
So, I mean, how do you feel about that? Like putting, I mean, you know, a lot of wrestlers we've had on this show, you know, it's in their blood. I mean, how do you feel about having your career on the line on August 3rd?
You know, honestly, I haven't really been able to voice how I feel. You know, it's kind of upsetting because anyone that's followed the NAFW, you know, they saw how I started off. I started off as just an extra official, and then I got into the mix. You know, I faced everyone I could. I've worked with Spike Dudley. You know, I've had all these people in line with us. And now all of a sudden, last show we had, I was supposed to be gone. You know, the stipulation was if I lose my title, I'm done with NAFW. And now it's like I get this shot again because I got all this support. You know, I got a lot of people helping me out, being there for me, wanting me to be back. So, you know, NAFW, Eric Newton, and all them turn around. They give me a shot, but, you know, the stipulations are thrown at me. They're giving me everything. You know, it's a really hard situation. You know, I'm trying to be there for all the people that support me, and now I got Jim Nasik. You know, he's not some flash in the pan. He's not a joke. This is a tough guy. You know, I'm not a big guy myself. You know, I got a lot of heart, and now it's, you know, what they're throwing at me, it's not really something I'm looking forward to. You know, I'm going to do my best, but, you know, I got a little worries on my own.
Is there anything special you're doing to prepare for this? Two-part question. Are you doing anything to prepare for this? And going forward after the match, I mean, do you have contingency plans if you happen to lose?
I do have, you know, there's a couple things. I have plans in case I lose. I don't plan on losing, you know. I mean, it's definitely something I'm working on. What I did do to prepare for this match, being that we're less than a month away, you know, I've been working with a lot of the new students, you know, a lot of the new blood that nobody's really seen on NAFW. They've actually been working with me. You know, there's been some posts on Facebook, the guys that are helping me train. So I'm looking for some new steps because the past few shows, I haven't really done a lot. You know, I've fought my best, but I needed something fresh. So I got some people helping me train. But just in case the unforeseen happens where I don't get out of this match with my career intact, I have contacted a few other people so I can at least go somewhere else. You know, my heart's with NAFW. I've been there since day one, before the company was even created. So, you know, I'm going to do my best and hopefully come out of this match with my career intact. You know, Jim Nasik is a really good friend of mine, but when it comes to wrestling, he's no joke. He's already told me, he's made it painfully obvious, you know, he's not going to take it easy on me. He's coming in there to try to save his career. You know, I'm coming in there trying to pursue my career forward. So, you know, hopefully, you know, we both get out of there alive. And in all honesty, I love Jim Nasik, but I'm going to be the one that comes out of there on top.
If you know if Jim Nasik is listening right now and he's out there and you could say anything to him, what would you say to him?
You know, the one thing I would say to him is that, you know, I respect the hell out of him. I love the guy. He was one of the first guys I've ever trained with, like I said. But when it comes down to careers, you know, to me, I'm just starting. You know, I'm not even halfway through my career. He's been around for a long time. He's accomplished a lot. It's time for some young blood. It's time for somebody else to take over. And, you know, I don't quit. I don't give up. When I'm in the ring with him, no matter how much weight he's got against me, no matter how much bigger he is than me, you know, I'll look him in the face and tell him, hey, I respect the hell out of you, but at the end of this match, I'm walking out with my career intact, and he's going to have to go home to his wife and kids, and I'm going to continue forward.
Very cool, very cool. Looks like a really good event. You know, NAFW, it seems like they continue to grow. What do fans have to look forward to, you know, aside from you and your career on the line match? What else do they have to look forward to this year, Cruel Summer 3?
Well, they have a lot to look forward to. You know, ever since even Cruel Summer 1, our fan base has grown. You know, we have a lot of fans that really respect our product. They got Chris Masters coming. A lot of people are looking forward to seeing him. We got Johnny Gargano, one of the big names that a lot of people enjoy his matches. You know, not even him. We got so many people. Chris Envy is one person not many people would expect me to respect. But, you know, seeing him out there, Fenris Fortune, we got Lineage. We got a lot of things to look forward to. We got the NAFW title, the Dirt Dog, Jeremy Leary. You know, he proved himself, and, you know, this is going to be a big show for him. This is his chance to prove himself. He's going to defend this title for the first time. We went through a lot of changes with the title. You know, we got that. We got some tag matches going on. We have a lot of good things going on in this show.
Well, it looks like it's going to be a tremendous show. You have top to bottom. Seems like you got a lot of talent. You know, we'd like to wish you good luck. Hope you come through and continue your career. Before we let you go, can you let fans that are listening who will be in the Chicopee, Mass area, or if you feel like traveling up, you know, it's summertime, get on the road, travel up to Chicopee to see some great wrestling. How can fans get tickets?
Fans, they can get tickets either if they don't have Facebook, but if they do, they can go on Facebook, go to the official NAFW site on Facebook. If they're not a fan already, they can just go on there and search NAFW Pro Wrestling. If they don't have a Facebook, they can go to NAFWProWrestling.com, order tickets there. If not, they could also speak directly to the Chicopee Boys and Girls Club, where the show will be held. They could always find out on Google, go to Chicopee Boys and Girls Club. They can get tickets there. If they do have the Facebook, aside from the NAFW site, they could directly contact Eric Newton on Facebook, and they could speak with him or myself. I could also get them tickets myself.
Very cool. Thanks a lot for the call and giving us a little bit. And again, good luck to you. We'd love to hear from you in the future, see how this turns out after the match. Thanks a lot for the call.
All right. Thank you, too. Thank you for having me, man.
Take it easy.
You too.
And there you have it, guys. Chris Shady Lamberton giving us a few minutes there. You know, interesting stuff. You know, it's got to be tough. You're putting your career on the line. You know, you walk out of there with a loss. You know, you got to pick yourself up by your bootstraps and try something else. So you can hear it in his voice that he's definitely focused. But, you know, I think he's dreading at least the potential of his career ending. So wish him the best of luck. August 3rd, Chicopee, Mass, NEFW, Cruel Summer 3. 347-838-9815 is the number to call. We got a bit of breaking news. It was on Twitter, and now it's officially on ImpactWrestling.com. Tara has been released. The statement on ImpactWrestling.com, Impact Wrestling has released Tara. We thank Tara for all her contributions and wish her the best of success in the future. So, very interesting. One of the mainstays in the Knockouts. Always liked what she brought to the table. Thought good in the ring, always pulled off a good character. Tara is gone from Impact Wrestling, Dave.
I think that's a dumb move, quite frankly. Not saying that the rest of those girls on that roster aren't talented, but having someone like her with the experience that she has and the, you know, the in-ring knowledge that she has, it would be a benefit to TNA for keeping her around, even if it's not in a performance role, but to help train some of these girls who aren't as experienced as some. I think it's a dumb move, but at the same time, I think it's also them trying to, you know, cut costs. They've been making, you know, several releases in the past few weeks and even over the past month or so. So, you know, I don't know if it was a mutual thing or if, you know, she said, you know, I want out, or they just dropped the bomb on her and said they were letting her go. But, yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see her back, you know, in the Divas division in the WWE, maybe even putting over girls like AJ and Caitlin, who are the future of the WWE Divas division. They're the present, but also the future as well.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I mean, again, you talk about creatively and looking at what Tara brings to the table. It's something that she brings a lot to the table, but, you know, is this purely a cost-cutting maneuver? And it does, again, you know, raise concerns of where exactly TNA and Impact Wrestling is going. I mean, someone as talented as her, and, you know, she's good looking, she can work, she can talk. You know, again, that whole thing we talked about writing, it's, you know, you can't find a place for her, but maybe that's not it. You know, as we're talking, you know, how can you release someone with that sort of talent? Maybe it's just, hey, we can get that salary off the books. And, you know, you got to wonder what's going on with this company and where it's going. But, again, you know, we did a show a couple weeks ago where, you know, the bulk of the 2 hours we're talking about, you know, things not looking good for TNA. And this is definitely something that, you know, doesn't look good for them. And, you know, like you said, putting over the young talent or whatever, you know, she's still good enough and she can still – It wouldn't surprise me if we see her back in the WWE in some capacity. And whether it's whether she comes back as a performer or if she's purely backstage and helping out with the younger divas and maybe even the Performance Center. You know, that opened in Florida. Someone like Tara being a part of that and helping some of the young women coming into the business with their characters and moveset. I think she could be an asset to the Performance Center, but it's interesting, you know, the news continues to come out of TNA and it's not good. So, you know, I'm sure we'll see her somewhere along the line. I doubt that's the last time we're going to see Tara on TV, but, you know, if she's listening, good luck to you because I've always been a fan. I've always thought she was incredibly talented. So, you know, it's interesting
here's
to see.
Here's what gets me about that. They get rid of her, and like I said, I don't know the details, but her boyfriend on TV, Jesse something, Mr. Pectaco, they keep him. Like, he's awful. Like, he's not a great wrestler. He's not a great talker. The only thing he's got for him is a good look, like, good body. Other than that, he's terrible. Like, I used to hate watching him. I'd fast forward my DVR. Even if he was wrestling Samoa Joe, I'd want to see Joe kill him, but I don't want to see this guy on my TV. I'd fast forward it. If they got rid of her, they damn sure better get rid of him because he does nothing for me, and he doesn't do anything for the audience. I don't see any qualities that he could bring to that television show whatsoever.
No, I agree with you. And it's again, do you look? Are they just looking at things that, like, you know, is Mr. Pectacular just cheaper? And he's staying on the books for now, and, you know, she's gone. I mean, it does make you wonder, you know, what's going on with that company. I mean, you know, I remember a few years back where they had a main event, Tara versus Mickie James in the steel cage, which it was a great matchup. I mean, you know, she's one of those female, like, she's a female main eventer. You know, a very talented woman, and you know, you got to wonder what's going on over there, and where, you know, there are moments like when you see the writing on the wall like this, it's like you wish you had a time machine, and I would love to just be able to fast forward 5 years just to see where this company winds up, because right now, in this moment, summer of 2013. Man, things do not look good for TNA, and that's another very talented individual that is gone from that roster. So I'm curious to see where she'll pop up going forward. 347-838-9815 is the number to call. We kind of divert a little bit. We talked to Shady about his upcoming match at NEFW's Cruel Summer 3. Check that out. Go to the NEFW website if you want tickets. We're talking a little bit about our favorite heel turns because it looks like wrestling is kind of getting back to, you know, that kind of definitive, you know, old school heel turn, which is fun and entertaining to watch. We had a bunch of them we had on Money in the Bank, and Money in the Bank, definitely a really solid, if not great, very solid pay-per-view. We talked a bit about the two Money in the Bank matches. We're both happy and content with the people who won those matches. I was happy that Daniel Bryan did not win because everyone was expecting it. But let's talk a little bit about the WWE title match. And interesting match to talk about because, you know, when we were given our predictions, we both kind of were heart. We want to see Mark Henry with a run, but picking with our head and our brains, we kind of thought John Cena was going to win. John Cena did win, and I just think what they're trying to do, and we've kind of touched on it a little bit, you know, they're beginning to. I sincerely believe, and I'm not saying that we're not going to see him in the main event at WrestleMania 30. It's 30. He's been a big part of the company. But I do think the writing's on the wall that they're beginning to phase out John Cena. And this may be John Cena's last run with the WWE title. And they're looking to me now with him beating Mark Henry and beating him the way he did. They're looking to make this at least a very strong run for him. So now he's won the title from The Rock. He was able to vanquish the foe in Ryback, and then he gets the World's Strongest Man to tap out. So you know, if the motivation creatively is to make this a very strong run for Cena, I get it. And it's going to be, the stronger they make this run, the more dramatic it's going to be when he drops it. So as much as I kind of wanted to see Mark Henry with a run with the WWE title, if that's where they're going, I get it. I get this being a strong run for John Cena, and I do think the writing's on the wall that you know, they're beginning to phase him out as the number one definitive guy in the company. Your thoughts on this matchup, Dave?
Well, as I said, I had fallen asleep Sunday night watching this match and woke up at the start of the main event, which was the All-Stars Money in the Bank ladder match. But after watching it yesterday, it was a good match. I was excited, a lot of exciting near falls and, you know, a few false finishes and, you know, a few things happened. But I was more surprised. I wasn't surprised John Cena won. I mean, that's not a surprise pretty much to anybody these days. And that's probably the biggest gripe amongst most wrestling fans out there, at least on the internet. But what I was more surprised about was I was expecting a more overwhelming positive reaction from Mark Henry. And then towards the end of that match, the Philadelphia crowd was actually, a good portion of it was in favor of Cena. And when he won, you heard some boos in there, but you heard a lot more cheers than you did boos. It was almost like Cena had to work his ass off in that match to earn their respect. And I was kind of happy that that happened because, you know, I'm a John Cena defender. I like watching him. He's not one of my favorite wrestlers, but he sends a good message to kids and wrestling, and he's, you know, been the face of that company, and he has worked his tail off for them since he's been on top for the last, you know, 10 years. And he's gotten a bad rap amongst most wrestling fans, and especially in, like, hostile cities, of course, like Chicago, but, you know, even places like Philadelphia. And I was kind of happy that, you know, when the bell rang and he raised the title, you heard some boos, but there were a lot of people standing up, clapping and cheering. It was almost like, okay, we respect you. Like, and maybe even, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned that, you know, that this could be them slowly phasing him out and this could be his last run as the title. Maybe this was the audience's way of saying, okay, you know, we know that you're near the end and you worked your ass off. We got to show you respect. And I thought that was pretty cool. Overall, the match was good. I would like to see Mark Henry win, don't get me wrong. But I think they got bigger plans for John Cena. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, like you said, phasing out. But we talk about WrestleMania 30. We've mentioned it a lot in tonight's show. What if we see John Cena pass the torch to somebody who's going to be the next face of the company or who's going to be a top guy at that WrestleMania? Or we could even see it next month at SummerSlam with his match with Daniel Bryan.
Well, yeah, and that's kind of like kind of my point with, you know, making this title run look strong and everything surrounding now the WWE title. And, you know, now we know Daniel Bryan has got his match at SummerSlam. I mean, it was interesting that John Cena picked him. I mean, if I was John Cena, I just would have picked the Brooklyn Brawler. He was right there, almost essentially get a night off for SummerSlam. I mean, why not? He was standing right there, hometown favorite. But he goes and picks Daniel Bryan. I think there's a lot of permutations that can go into this. But I think John Cena has had a strong run. So if Daniel Bryan goes over at SummerSlam, you know, it would be huge for Daniel Bryan. And I hope that, like, there'd be some continued respect for John Cena if he drops the title at SummerSlam to Daniel Bryan. One thing I thought of is, do we see something where, you know, Randy Orton cashes in sometime between now and SummerSlam, which, you know, Daniel Bryan is, but I have my SummerSlam match, but John Cena is, but I got my rematch clause. And so it turns into a triple threat. And, you know, if there are any two guys that their faces, their images really are just completely connected with this latest era in wrestling, the last 10 years in the WWE, it's Orton and John Cena. You know, if you have a guy like Daniel Bryan beat those two guys in a SummerSlam main event to win the WWE title, that would be huge for him. That would be a huge moment that would really put him over. I mean, he's so over right now. But and I'm usually not the biggest fan of a triple threat match, but if they went in that direction and Daniel Bryan beats John Cena and Randy Orton, I mean, the wrestling universe would just blow up, Dave.
he'd be a made guy. And, you know, and I remember, you know, after you mentioned this a few months ago when, you know, we talked about, you know, the rise of Daniel Bryan this year. And it even kind of started last year, but it's really kicked into high gear this year. You know, I mentioned that, you know, he was so over, especially going to a Monday Night Raw, you know, locally here in Hartford. And I thought he was a made guy then because it was everything was about him. Like, you know, I went to the merchandise stand to get a Dolph Ziggler T-shirt, and I can't tell you how many foam finger, yes, Daniel Bryan merchandise that kids were buying, and even, you know, young adults. And I thought he was a made guy then. But, you know, if he were to defeat the two of them, two guys who basically, you know, came in, like John Cena and Randy Orton, came in together and defined this era, if you want to call it the PG era or whatever the case is, but defined this era, and he went over on both of them and became the WWE champion, essentially that's two people passing the torch to one guy. And Daniel Bryan being the next big name in the WWE. I mean, I'm just afraid more than anything. You know, he is so hot right now. He sells so much merchandise. Everybody is into him. That yes chant is just, the people go ape shit. Excuse my language, but they go ape for it. I'm just afraid because of his look and his size that it's not, the WWE will push him only so far. They won't push him over the top. They won't turn him into a, they won't put him up there in John Cena mega superstar status. And I think he's so over, he can be in that mega superstar status. I think he can break the mold and go on talk shows and do radio interviews with that beard and just his look. You know what I mean? Wrestling has always been about people want to see something different. Well, this is different. He's a technical wrestling master, you know, from what his character is. And he's got an authentic, original, weird look about him. And the people love it. Normally in wrestling, it's about muscles, big bodybuilder type, the all-American boy, you know, with the pretty face, like John Cena, even Randy Orton to a certain extent. Daniel Bryan's the polar opposite of that, and it's over as the all-American boy look, big muscle-bound look that Vince has promoted for years, not just with John Cena, but with other guys too. So I'm just afraid that it won't, that he will only get so far. And they're even bringing it up in some ways in the storyline with Daniel Bryan when it comes to the power struggle amongst the McMahon family. I mean, Vince doesn't really care for him and doesn't like his look. And Triple H and Stephanie are all about it. They think he's, you know, great and he's exciting to watch and it's something different and new and fresh. You know, I think that they're going to expose that a little bit in this upcoming match at SummerSlam between John Cena and Daniel Bryan, as well as their relationship with the Bella Twins and this new reality show, The Total Divas, on E. But he's in the limelight. He's easily the most popular wrestler on the roster. Granted, you know, John Cena's number one in terms of, you know, everything else. But Daniel Bryan is easily the most popular guy in the WWE, in all of wrestling, in my opinion. In all of wrestling. There's nobody hotter than him right now.
Yeah, the thing you wonder about Daniel Bryan, and we touched on it on Sunday, is, you know, to me, like, sometimes sometimes fans don't know what they want. You know, and they beg for something, but, you know, sometimes the chase becomes more exciting than, you know, the destination. And, you know, I would be, like, right now, you know, just the manic energy that Daniel Bryan brings to the table, this aggression, this drive to prove, you know, that he's not the weak link, you know, just to prove that he can be with the big boys, that he can go with anyone. Like, that's what's making this character so incredible. That's what's making this character really someone to get behind. And the small stature works for that character. That, you know, that just that small guy that wants to prove that he can go with anyone, that he's not afraid to get in the ring with anyone. I would just be concerned that when and if he wins that title, where the storylines go after that. Because now the hunger's not there. The chase isn't there anymore. He is the big dog. How does that unfold over time? Does his character kind of lose a bit once he wins? Because the chase right now is so engaging creatively. You just would wonder to see what his run would be like as champion. 347-838-9815. We're getting close to the end of this program. We got Mike on the line, so let's bring him up. Mike, how you doing tonight?
Hey, guys. Good. Not bad. Just listening to all your points about good wrestling. You guys are talking about Money in the Bank, and you're talking about how old Daniel Bryan is. One of the things WWE liked to do, especially in the past, was make guys with muscles champion, like Yokozuna. There you go, Ken. There's your laugh. Thank you.
There's muscle. There was muscle there. God rest his soul.
Oh, yeah, Yokozuna, may he rest in peace. And you touched on it before, you were at WrestleMania 10. His match with Luger, I mean, he made Luger look like $1 million.
He was skilled for a guy his size.
No, he was. And he dropped the leg drop, he did the belly-to-belly. He was very agile, and God rest his soul again. But getting to talk about current wrestling, to all the John Cena haters out there, they know what they're doing. They don't know what they're doing. They talk a good talk. They talk about how John Cena only has 5 moves. Well, you know what? Name me a wrestler today that doesn't do the same moves over and over. So we've seen
That criticism always kills me, because it's like the same people who say that, like, you know, pop when CM Punk runs into the corner and hits someone with a high knee. I mean, it gets silly. I mean, that's wrestling. Like, that's part of it. Like, you get the crowd to pop for the moveset that you do every match. It's just like that. Everyone has it. Everyone has that thing that they do each and every match. It becomes kind of a silly criticism.
Rob Van Dam does the same stuff. Jericho does the same stuff. They all do the same stuff, basically. It's one of those things. I just can't put my finger on it. Going into SummerSlam now, we're going to have probably Big E Langston versus Dolph Ziggler, I would imagine. What do you guys think about that match?
I think it could be very good. I'm curious to see like what we'll get out of Big E Langston in a real like legit top profile kind of program with Ziggler. Again, getting back to talking about turns. I mean, I loved the turn last night on Monday Night Raw. And the way Ziggler can sell things. I mean, it looked like Big E just knocked him into the middle of next week. So I'm curious. I think it's going to be good, and I think it's a good way. Look, Ziggler's going to be world champion at some point, but he's, again, you know, a guy that I think we got to get behind him and get back to, like, him chasing it. And this kind of pulls him out of the title picture for a little bit. He can get this issue squared away. So I like it. What's that?
Yeah, I think they shortchanged him. I think his time with world champion should have been longer.
I would agree with that, but we can't change that now, you know? So I think, you know, I wouldn't give it back to him too soon. I mean, it is what it is. So I kind of like the idea of pulling him away from the title for a little bit, have this program with Big E, and then down the road a piece, get back into the title picture for either the world championship or the WWE championship. But I'm looking forward to see what these two guys do together. What do you think, Dave?
I am looking forward to the match. Big E is one of those guys. I think he's going to be the new breed of power big wrestlers. He's short and stocky, but he's very agile for a guy his size. He's a little bit smaller than Ryback, but he's much quicker. Two agile guys in a match, and of course Big E's got power, and Ziggler's got agility, and he sells really well, and you know he's very quick and can move around. I think it's going to be for a very exciting match, and the build up that's been with this turn now, and the relationship that they've had in the past, and there's a history behind it, and they could tell a good story with it. I think it makes for a very good storyline, and of course a pretty good match. I just hope that, you know, if they are going this route, that it's Ziggler's still fresh in the main event scene, so you don't want to take away a whole lot from him. But at the same time, Big E is still fresh in the WWE scene overall, so it's kind of difficult as to how they can handle who's going to go over, at least in my opinion. But I think at the end of the day, this feud would be in Dolph Ziggler's favor to get some form of revenge.
I agree with both of your points. I think it's great. I think it's great house show material as well, and you know, and as well as SummerSlam material. That would be a great match, and I would look forward to seeing that match. Definitely.
Yeah, you bring up a good point. I mean, the whole idea of like what they can do in house shows with these guys, and AJ thrown into the mix is definitely going to make for some entertaining television. And
well,
again, getting
AJ did last night, yeah,
kind of program.
I agree, and AJ being the scorn woman, you know she's going to get her cheap shots in on Dolph Ziggler. You know that she's going to get involved in the match. I mean, last night on Monday Night Raw, that was a great championship match. And that was a great distraction. When the bell rang, everybody was like, oh, my God, what the heck happened? And then the referee looked at AJ, and then all of a sudden Alberto Del Rio gives Dolph the kick, and that was history. That was all she wrote. And then she went like Sensational Jerry. May she rest in peace. She did like a Sensational Jerry job when Jerry was kicking the Macho Man after the WrestleMania 7 match.
That's a great analogy, Mike. You know, I didn't even think of that. I've always thought of her as like Lita with an edge. But now I think about it, she's like, if Lita and Sensational Sherry had children, AJ would be it. Like seriously.
I love AJ, it. That's a great analogy.
Sherry was nuts. Sherry was nuts. She was a good-looking woman and perfect. That was perfect. I didn't even think of that,
Jerry,
Mike.
Jerry did everything that a manager... She went above and beyond for her men. She was with Ted DiBiase. She went above and beyond for him. She was with Macho, same thing. She was with Ric Flair in WCW. She climbed the cage. I mean, she went in with her with almost no clothes on, that retirement match that Hogan and Flair had at Halloween Havoc one time. She was a great manager. Harlem Heat, just a tremendous manager, and AJ's an up and comer. She knows what she's doing. She knows what she wants. And that's it. I mean, listen, she got dumped by Ziggler. I think it was the right move. You know, I think it was the storyline makes sense. Hey, she cost him the shot. She cost him the championship. Move on. And my next point is Punk versus Lesnar. It's going to be a great match. I don't know if Punk's going to win. I don't see it. I see Brock Lesnar destroying Punk.
If this was real life, yeah, I mean, that's the way it would go down. It should be interesting to see how this match plays itself out, how they, you know, how the program runs itself. But, yeah, definitely another cool heel turn this weekend, Heyman turning. And, yeah, I mean, that should be a very exciting matchup. I'm looking forward to seeing what these two guys can do working with each other.
It's going to be great. It's going to be a great match. It's SummerSlam looks like it's going to be, you know, it's going to be set. You know, if the World Wrestling Entertainment is listening, make this is why SummerSlam is one of your top four. Make it sizzle for the summer, and let the fans see some great wrestling action, because I'm looking forward to SummerSlam already, and if we're not even up to it, I'm looking forward to it. But, guys, thank you for my time, and I will speak to you. If I'm not working Sunday night, hopefully I'll give you a call. If not, I'll speak to you on Tuesday.
Thanks for giving us a call, Mike. Good stuff, as
thank
always.
You, Bert.
And you know, Mike, it's interesting. Mike brought up, you know, I never thought of that, and you just said it, but, like, great analogy with Sensational Sherry. And it's cool. You just said, you know, AJ is a student of the game, and she's gone back and studied some of the greats, and she's channeling some of them. It's really cool to see someone who really studied their craft. So great points by Mike. Good show tonight, Dave.
Yeah, great show. I love how we can, you know, talk about the present but tie in the past and the similarities and differences between the two. And, of course, the knowledge from, you know, our fans, our listeners like Mike and like Tony. And, you know, I think it's just great. It makes for a perfect recipe for the best in pro wrestling talk.
Yeah, it's cool because it winds up becoming like a very ensemble show. I mean, you and I are hosting it, but, you know, the fans that call in definitely add a lot to the whole show. Thank you so much to Chris Shady Lamberton for giving us a call. Check out NEFW Cruel Summer 3. He'll be wrestling in a retirement match. So you want to check that out. You know, we got this summer shaping up to be a a great summer of pro wrestling. The WWE right now, they're clicking. They're really clicking. You know, young talent, established talent, things are looking really up for this. They seem to have at least gotten better with the 3-hour Raw. Solid Money in the Bank. Looks like it's going to be a very entertaining summer. So for the next couple weeks, we're talking wrestling. We'll have some great stuff to talk about. Thanks for tuning in. For Dave, I am Ken. See y'all Sunday.